Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
As you listeners know, before we get started with an episode of the PowerCast, we have some chatter with our guest. Joshua Cutchin returns to the show this week, and our guest co-host is Sim Swartz. And we talked about a little test we do with our recording mechanism where it learns the background noise. And sometimes it reduces all or most of it. So you don't hear it. You don't have to hear background noise. But because I'm on a separate input than they are, I have to do it twice. So it takes like 6 seconds to do. However, because we're possibly dealing with ultra-terrestrials here, maybe it took 6 hours?
It's entirely possible. I mean, I don't think I soiled my pants, so that probably might preclude that possibility. But it's always a possibility.
It has to be family-friendly. This goes on a real network. So what you soil is your business.
Yes. No, I knocked over a potted plant. That's what it was. Yeah.
You've got to watch over for those potted plants.
Always calm, always cool, always collected, Gene.
Well, collected, I'm going to dispute that.
Be my guest. That's fine.
Joshua, it's been a while since you've been on the show, and you've got a new book, The Ecology of Soul's Companion, A New Mythology of Death and the Paranormal. That already raises 3,000 questions.
Depending on the way you look at it, it could be four books. So the main book is called Ecology of Souls, A New Mythology of Death and the Paranormal. It turned out to be such a big project that I had to split that into Volume 1 and Volume 2. And then, you know, when you're looking at binding books with as many, you know, references as I have 4,200 endnotes in the darn thing. It became apparent that I needed to take the old school route that you used to see in academia, where you sort of have a separate companion. So the companion is, that's what that is, although that will be freely available on my website later next week. There's been some Amazon shenanigans in the background. But so it's Ecology of Souls Volume 1, Ecology of Souls Volume 2, The Ecology of Souls Companion, which is completely, I don't want to say it's disposable, but, you know, you can have free access to the references. You don't have to get the companion. It's for print completionists only. And then there is the ebook, which is both volumes 1 and 2 combined with the references. So, yeah, between 1 and 4 books, depending on how you frame it.
I'm dizzy, folks. So, therefore, this is the Ecology of Souls disposable.
Well, the companion is, yeah. But I release all of them at the same time, so.
So they're not disposable.
No. It's one book, Ecology of Souls, that I had to split into two if I wanted to have it in print, and then there's a separate one that's just the end notes and references and whatnot. Yeah.
I'm giving you a hard time, Joshua. Seriously, what, pray tell, is a new mythology of death and the paranormal?
As would probably be, you know, if anybody remembers some of my previous appearances, I've always sort of been a bit disinterested in the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Not because I don't think it has a certain merit here and there, but there are always these pernicious outliers that I can never really, I have never been able to really discard, right? And I've always been attracted to the you know, Jacques Vallée school of thought, especially comparisons that you can make between the UFO phenomena and fairy folklore. So there were those things in the back of my mind, but also two things that I'd always found really compelling. You know, one was the famous quote from Ann Streber, who, collecting correspondence to Whitley from experiencers in the wake of communion, made the observation that this has something to do with what we call death. That was her quote. So there's that, and then there's also the fact that you have these stories that, you know, time and time again, dead loved ones, or, you know, things appearing to be dead loved ones, if you want to take sort of screen memory angle, I guess, keep on appearing in alien abductions. So that, to me, suggested that there was something else going on at a deeper level. So the idea was to just look at the UFO phenomena through those two lenses, or through those two, you know, aspects, and specifically, more specifically, like looking at it through death. But what became really apparent was that as I tried to do that, there was a lot of background information that needed to be there, and there were a lot of different angles in the paranormal, more broadly speaking, that I found were very much related. So it ended up being this really comprehensive look and kind of a snapshot of the way that I view the phenomena today.
Extremely comprehensive, I should say. I've spent the last week going over both Volume 1 and 2, and I have to say, I mean, this is a very well-written and very well-researched couple of books.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate it. It is long. I guess that's, I don't know if that's a virtue or not. But yeah, it became clear, because I just mainly wanted to tackle the UFO topic, but it became clear that if I did that, I would have these endless digressions into things like these older ideas of the way that we conceptualize the soul as, you know, being part of multiple souls or being able to wander away from its owner and things like that. So it became apparent that, like, you know what, let's just get all that out ahead of the UFO discussion and then talk about UFOs. So that's roughly the separation that there is. Although there's plenty of UFOs in Volume 1, that's roughly the distinction. Volume 1 is just sort of bringing everyone up to speed on that, while also talking about things like near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, fairy folklore, shamanism, entheogens, ley lines, monuments, you know, all these things that, again, fall under that umbrella. I don't talk about time, because I thought the book was long enough without adding another, you know, 500 pages trying to figure out, you know, if time is cyclical or, you know, retrocausality or any of those things. So, but yeah, I feel confident that this is sort of a pretty good representation of the way that I tend to view the phenomena right now. Phenomenon, depending on your perspective, I guess.
Well, there is, of course, the possible connection between UFO abductions and near-death experiences. That kind of brings you close to a possible afterlife concept, doesn't it?
It does, and I think readers will perceive a lot of, you know, Kenneth Ring in here, a lot of Eddie Bullard, you know, individuals who have drawn connections not only between UFO abductions and near-death experiences, but also, you know, these shamanic initiations as well. But I think what I came around to intuit, and again, a giant asterisk beside all my stuff, you know, and that asterisk reads maybe, right? Like, I'm not sure, but what I have perceived is that the near-death experience might be, to me, like the purest form of this contact modality, and then all these other things share those same attributes. And I suspect, I can't say for certain, but I suspect that the reason that all these things tend to look so similar, up to and including even some cryptid encounters, some, not all, are because you do approach that, that sort of boundary point, between our world and the afterlife, our world and the other world, whatever you want to call it. But it really is that you're basically brought to death's door in a lot of these things, you know. I mean, obviously that happens with NDEs, but you'll find people who have taken entheogens and whatnot say the same thing. And, of course, you know, a lot of these shamanic initiations are almost de facto near-death experiences. So what does that say about the alien abduction scenario that it resembles that to such a strong degree? So just trying to flesh out a lot of those parallels and, again, keep on bringing in that ancient soul craft, that ancient soul concept that we seem to have disposed of in the modern West was really important to me.
An interesting concept here that arrives. So people who claim to have been abducted by the occupants of a flying saucer, they claim to have communicated with those occupants. Therefore, they're talking to something in the afterlife or in another dimension. What are they talking to?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that's something that I'm not really sure if I have a solid answer on. You know, I definitely think there's a case to be made that these things might be an aspect of the self. So in other words, they might be, if you look at some of those polypsychic traditions that we have multiple selves, it might be the higher self, you know, that old idea. It might be literally our dead in another guise. And we can talk about the strengths and weaknesses of these things, because there's a physical component that I don't think you can deny to the UFO contact. And there's also an idea that I'm really fond of entertaining, which is the idea that these might be psychopomps, which are the figures that in traditional religions or even some folk figures that escort the human dead across the transition to the afterlife.
Let's transition to these announcements with Joshua, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, so these are the individuals helping transition you to the afterlife. So, is there for a UFO abduction some sort of near-death experience?
I think an argument could be made that it is of a same character. You know, I think that the idea of just labeling every UFO contact, you know, on this near-death sliding spectrum is a bit reductive. But I think the substantive hallmarks are still there. And, you know, as far as exactly what these psychopomps might do, I think that this is something that has kind of been lurking in the background of my work, but in the work of others as well, and hasn't really been addressed. So psychopomps would be characters like Egypt's Anubis or the Norse Valkyries or Greek Hermes. And if you look at the work of someone like George Hansen and the Trickster and the Paranormal, he, you know, goes at great lengths to say that, you know, certain trickster gods are gods of the threshold. And what's more of a threshold than the point of death, right? And to the extent that, you know, Hermes himself was a trickster figure. So you have this sort of tricksterism that has been alluded to in the past. I would also argue that this is sort of a connection that haunts Passport to Magonia to a degree. You know, Valet made these great comparisons between fairies and UFOs, but the unspoken background information is that a lot of cultures pre-theosophy thought of fairies as being intimately tied to the dead, in some instances actually being the dead. So if you use the transitive property dead to fairies to UFOs, I think it suggests a lot about the phenomenon. You know, so you have this liminal, tricksterish, threshold-crossing character in both these psychopomps and in a lot of modern paranormal in general, not just specifically UFO occupants. And then you have some of the symbolism, which keeps on popping up in a lot of different UFO sightings. Things like birds, things like dogs. But also, you know, some of the things that are said, some of the allusions, the emphasis that a lot of these occupants place on the human soul and on spirituality. And then on top of all that, and this is really the cherry on top for me, is that one of the most potent psychopomp symbols is the boat. You know, you think of the ferry crossing the River Styx, F-E-R-R-Y, not F-A-I-R-Y, not F-A-I-R-Y, right? But you think of the ferry crossing the River Styx, and you think of, you know, Viking funerals and things like this. Like, it's a very common symbol for that afterlife transition. And what happens when a culture maps the entire world and realizes that the other world, the afterlife, doesn't lie beyond the next mountain range, doesn't lie across the sea, isn't under the earth? Where do we transpose that to? And I would argue that you transpose that to the stars. And the fact that the UFO phenomenon is so transportation focused really suggests that boat motif is again emerging in this new body of mythology that we have.
Is this a universal consciousness?
One of the things that I didn't get to discuss as much as I probably should have or even would have liked were, you know, concepts of monism, the idea that the brain-body distinction is sort of a falsehood and that everything is one with everything. That's certainly something that you see in a lot of these stories, you know. I mean, I think it was maybe Dana Howard might have been the first contactee to coin the term source, you know, and that's something that pops up in John Mack's writings as well. But there is definitely a flavor of monism throughout a lot of these UFO contact experiences. And if you look at some of the, again, we're in like real woo-woo territory here, folks, right? And I don't necessarily like or ascribe to this stuff, but I wanted to examine it because it's not going away. If you look at some of the things and sort of the fringes of the UFO literature, you do find allusions not only to obviously reincarnation and past lives. That was a strong component in Mack's work, but also ideas like, you know, dual souls, the idea that someone can have an alien soul and a human soul within them. And that's an odd idea, but if you do think about this being sort of a universal consciousness where distinctions are blurred on the other side of whatever boundary separates us from death, then that makes the idea a little bit more palatable, I would think.
You know, when you bring up having two souls in your body, I think of the sci-fi TV series Stargate SG-1, where the other soul was a parasitic creature called a Gottwald. And they were the gods of ancient Egypt, and they existed by possessing a human host. Therefore, you had the human and you had the Gottwald in one body.
Yeah, and it's a much more ancient idea. I'm not exactly up to speed on that, and because, you know, a lot of the Stargate stuff does have some echoes in actual, you know, mythology for Egypt, but I'm not quite up to speed on that. But I do know that, you know, the Egyptians were very much involved in concepts of polypsychism. I think they might have suggested up to 9 souls that we each possessed, each with their own degree of, you know, autonomy.
Talk about multiple personality disorder.
Well, I mean, that's certainly a good thing to bring up, because I think an argument can be made that our current understanding of mental health might be a little bit misconstrued. You know, there is a line of thought amongst some modern psychiatrists where they actually encourage people to engage with the voices in their head if they're schizophrenic. And oftentimes these people have, from what I understand, quite positive outcomes from actually engaging with the voices instead of just trying to suppress them. So that would be much more in line with, you know, a polypsychic sort of interpretation of ourselves. And we still entertain these ideas to this day. I mean, you talk about, like, you know, well, my heart says no, but my mind says yes, and things like that. And I kind of wonder if there isn't more truth to that, because you see it across a lot of different civilizations, both in the old and new world, that we're composed of multiple constituent components, you know, some of which can leave us and wander about at will. And, you know, if that's a possibility, then I think it brings a lot of the things that we assumed were external to us in the paranormal, sheds those in a different light, I would say.
Well, one of the characters in the UFO field that communicated with something that may have been external or internal was, of course, Richard Schaefer. He was communicating with the Deros and Tiros, the remnants of an ancient race that existed on Earth and fled during a possible worldwide catastrophe. But he was also hospitalized, I guess with the feeling that, oh, he hears voices, therefore he must be nuts. On the other hand, obviously, if you follow the story of Schaefer, that the parents of his first wife railroaded him into a sanitarium because they just wanted to get rid of him.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate story, and you kind of have to wonder if there had been a more accepting family or, you know, culture around what Schaefer was going through, if you know, his experiences might have been interpreted a little bit differently. And you see this with a lot of different people who have had UFO contact. You know, they either, you know, oftentimes as a culture, we tend to collectively basically shun these people. And I really think that we very well might be all the poorer for it. You know, if they were in an animist society where ideas like shamanism were tolerated and even celebrated, they might have a much different experience. But, you know, the one demographic in the world that you can make fun of with no repercussions, the one demographic where nobody's really looking out for them not being made fun of, is the paranormal experiencer or the UFO experiencer.
This would particularly be the contactee or the channeler, someone who claims to be in contact with some other force, a higher force, whatever that force might be. We're talking with Joshua Cutchin, and obviously he's got a very wide range and some might say very complicated or sophisticated view of paranormal events. With Gene and Tim and Joshua, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Are you prepared for more severe food shortages? It's likely that over the next year, serious food shortages will plague us. American farmers are dealing with insane diesel fuel prices and fertilizer shortages, which will lower crop yields. And that means your family's favorite foods will soon be in short supply while fetching sky-high prices. Inflation is the new normal, folks. It's time to act before things get even worse. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com without delay. You'll find ready hour emergency food kits from My Patriot Supply that lasts up to 25 years in storage. Each kit provides over 2,000 calories a day to keep your energy up. Order your emergency food kits today by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your food ships fast and arrives in unmarked boxes. Listen, there are ways to beat food shortages. When you're ready for real preparedness, make sure to look for Ready Hour Foods from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Maruso reporting. Steve Bannon, who was a key associate of former President Donald Trump and an influential figure on the American right, was convicted on Friday of contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the committee investigating last year's attack on the U.S. Capitol. A jury found Bannon, 68, guilty of two misdemeanor counts for refusing to provide testimony or documents to the House of Representatives Select Committee. He's looking at 30 days to a year behind bars for each count and a fine of $100,000 to $100,000. You'll be sentenced in October.
We may have lost the battle here today, but we're not going to lose this war.
Independent truckers protesting California's new gig worker law blockaded California's third busiest seaport for the third straight day on Friday, delaying shipments at the state's top agricultural export hub and adding to U.S. supply chain headaches. This is USA Radio News. The House Judiciary Committee is working on legislation to ban certain assault-style rifles. Democratic Chairman Jerry Nadler challenges Republicans to support the measure in light of recent mass shootings. This is Senator Dick Durbin.
There is no reason for a person to own a military assault weapon. It has no value for hunting or sports or even self-defense. It is a killing machine. And when I ask how many AR-15s there are in the United States, I can't get a good number.
Making his first public appearance following the House subcommittee's hearing on the January 6th attack Thursday, Senator Josh Hawley, the Republican from Missouri, took to the stage at the Turning Point USA Summit in Tampa Friday night. While not addressing the footage or the actions of the rioters inside the Capitol, he has focused his speech on the battle for free, fair, and secure elections.
Liberals out there in the liberal media, just in case you haven't gotten the message yet, I do not regret it. And I am not backing down.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
My name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
So let us continue with that. You see, I think the problem in allocating all this to the UFO field is people want a simple answer. And I understand that. The more you delve into the paranormal, the more crazy it gets in terms of complications. So they want the flying saucer to be a spaceship. And maybe it is, or some of them are. They want people who claim to be in contact with aliens to be either nuts or having some internal experience that they can't properly explain. People who see ghosts, well, they think they're in touch with dead people. People who see cryptids, I don't know what they're supposed to be. Maybe they all come here from other dimensions via the multiverse.
It's one of those things where... You know, one of the most endearing criticisms that I run into is, you know, them saying, oh, well, you're saying that, you know, UFOs might be spirit phenomena or might be psychic in nature. And, you know, these things don't leave burn marks in the ground. And I say, well, let's take a step back from that claim. You know, this is something that Terrence McKenna addressed on Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove's original Thinking Aloud show. And he said that, you know, he made the observation that, you know, Carl Jung actually said that we don't have the intellectual tools to explore how flying saucers might sit at the intersection of the physical and the psychic. But, you know, beyond that, let's be a little bit more pragmatic and say, well, what does that mean? Well, I think the best explanation or the best illustration of where those two things meet can be seen in psi phenomena and in ghost hunting. You know, one of the things when I wrote Where the Footprints In, my book on Weird Bigfoot with Tim Renner, one of the things that we kept on getting confronted with was people saying, well, you know, ghosts don't leave footprints in the woods. And I'm like, have you ever read any early parapsychological literature? Because that was literally one of the first techniques in ghost hunting was to spread talcum powder on the floor and wait for footprints to manifest. And I don't think that there are a lot of people who entertain the possibility of ghosts existing who would say that they are material, you know, that they are really physical in the same sense that, you know, the desk that I'm sitting at is, right? But they can impact the physical world. And similarly, perhaps even more respectably, I would say, if you look at the laboratory work of some folks like Dean Radin, Daryl Bim, Rupert Sheldrick, etc., people who are really trying to play by scientific rules and looking at a lot of the psi phenomena, there does seem to be the suggestion that psychic phenomena can interact with the physical world, and thoughts are immaterial, yet can interact with the physical world. So once you sort of establish that for people, some of these ideas that you talk about become a little bit more palatable, I think. But yeah, we have this, it's what Greg Bishop calls a certainty fetish, right? People want to say UFOs are this or they aren't. Or, you know, the UFOs are spaceships or they don't exist. And I think there's a lot of different possibilities. Even if you adhere to an idea like I have, like, I leave room for extraterrestrials. I leave room for unexplained natural phenomena. I leave room for Trevor James Constable-style sky creatures. Like, I love that idea. But, yeah, I don't think it really does anyone any good to be so certain about what these things are or aren't when we really don't have the answers yet. And so to that end, I like to explore some of the less popular avenues of speculation to see if there's something that we haven't been ignoring for a long time.
I wanted to go back just briefly to Trevor James Constable, because I think most people who study UFOs these days have no clue who this guy was. But he wrote a book suggesting that at least some UFOs were physical creatures that fly. Can you define what he worked on?
Well, you know, I know you spoke about, you know, I think you'd called it Dirkopol, which is this idea that there were, you know, these entities, these almost amoeba-like, maybe even, if memory serves, we'd probably call them plasmoids today, that lived in the upper echelons of the atmosphere and would, you know, drift about, and that was responsible for at least some of these UFO sightings. And it's a peculiar idea, but I do find it attractive in certain cases. I mean, there's a case that I talk about in the book that where an experiencer came to me. She was with her either husband or boyfriend at the time. They're still together. I can't recall which. They were on Mackinac Island, and they were at a Halloween event. And they were UFO enthusiasts, but they'd never seen a UFO. And they were sort of joking about how they wanted to see a UFO. And they look in the air, and they both see something in the sky. And she sees this giant sort of pinkish organic amoeba thing floating through the night sky. And she was very clear about the fact that she perceived it as being organic and alive. And when she tried to corroborate this with her husband, who was right beside her at the time, he said that he saw a giant, like, thunderbird creature, like something that you would see in, you know, a lot of Native American artwork. You know, part of me doesn't know what to make of that, right? I mean, that's you could just say, oh, well, they're both lying, but I didn't get that impression at all when I spoke with these folks. It is not uncommon to have people report seeing anomalies in the sky, but describing the anomalies differently. And that sort of brings in ideas about how much we are bringing to our perceptions when we see these things, and sort of a co-creation hypothesis. But, you know, also, I mean, I look at something like the image of the Thunderbird, and you do hear these stories from time to time about even structured craft that turn into birds. My editor, Barbara Fisher, had a similar experience when she was in her youth, where she saw a flying saucer, and her mother swore up and down that she saw a red bird. And that sounds so nonsensical until you consider the fact that the bird is a universal, and I don't use that term lightly. I mean, literally every, you know, indigenous people in the world thought of the bird as a symbol of the soul, and that a bird could be a soul. You know, you see this in a lot of European beliefs that birds in the house meant doom or death. And then when you take that and you hold it up against some of Carl Jung's ideas that he espoused, including the possibility that the UFO might be the externalized soul in some form or fashion, and then you take that and couple it with the idea that we have multiple souls that can wander, it kind of makes you question whether or not something like that could be at play, at least at the very least on sort of a mythopoetic level, I guess.
I like the idea that you brought out in the book that if the human mind doesn't have a conception on something unknown, that it fills in that spot. And there was a name that you called it.
Yeah, this is I'm a big fan of this idea nowadays, and maybe it's because it's the only way that I can reconcile some of these inconsistencies. You see similar ideas cropping up in the work of Ginny Randles and Hillary Evans, this idea that we're sort of bringing some aspect of our own expectations to the phenomena, and that's what we end up seeing, because either we can't handle what we're actually looking at, or our brains literally aren't wired. We don't have the hardware to actually perceive what we're looking at. And you know, Greg Bishop has taken up this idea of the co-creation theory in recent years, that that perhaps we're bringing something to the experience as well. And I find it really attractive. I find it really convenient. But, you know, some of these things are so confounding that you have to sort of end up embracing some of these more convenient ideas just to make some sort of sense of them. But, you know, so I have long wondered that the purest form of all these phenomena might not be the orbs of light, because you see these in hauntings and cryptid encounters and, you know, UFO encounters, obviously. And I kind of wonder if that's not the naked version of whatever this other intelligence is. And then it somehow interacts with you, maybe through the synthesis of DMT, since, you know, the pineal gland is sensitive to light. And then sort of like shuffles through the Rolodex of what you expect and what you want to see and what you don't want to see, and says, oh, I think I'll look like a Bigfoot today. Or, oh, I think I'll look like a ghost today, or a UFO, or whatever, what have you. Again, completely untestable idea, but I find it to be an interesting line of speculation.
There was a ghost hunter by the name, I think it was Lloyd Potty, who was investigating a haunted house where people were seeing like a little old lady in it, and managed to achieve contact, I think, through a medium. And the spirit, or whatever you want to call it, admitted that its true form was actually, she described it, like a ball of light.
That is interesting, and I wish I'd known about that like 8 months ago. Where were you, Tim? I think, you know, the balls of light aren't something that you get brought up a lot amongst traditional cryptozoologists, who really are in the camp that these things are flesh and blood creatures, oftentimes relics of, you know, a prehistoric era. But once you get a couple of beers into the Bigfoot researcher at the conference, they'll say, oh, well, you know, we didn't see Bigfoot that night, even though we were looking for Bigfoot, and there are Bigfoot sightings in this area all the time, but we did see these strange lights, you know.
With Tim, Joshua, and Gene, you're in
the Pericast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to give you a URL that can and will change your life. You will simply investigate it and look into it for your own self. Do your own research. This is an absolute 360 win for GCN, for American Tax Solutions, and for you. Ladies and gentlemen, these are top tax lawyers that will deliver you super service very, very quickly and change your life. The average person can save up to 90% on their taxes. Visit GCNTaxCut.com. That's GCNTaxCut.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April, my husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW, need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie. It works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC, great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Cue the maraschino cherry. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
It's interesting in some of those sci-fi TV shows. Star Trek does it. Obviously, Stargate SG-1 did it, which is lights that you see are often highly intelligent beings that can assume different forms.
That's a really good point, Gene. You know, back in earlier years, TV works on a completely different budget than films do, and I think sometimes it was a function of the special effects budget, but I think maybe they were onto something in a lot more ways than they realized. One of the touchstones for one of the later chapters in the book where I go into cryptids is Michel Mercier's Lake Monster Traditions, which is a fantastic book. You know, I was like, some people came to me and they said, oh, you did Passport to Magonia for Bigfoot when you did Where the Footprints In. And I'm like, yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm not fit to tie his shoes, but I can see how that perspective could be in there. And I said, maybe I should do that for Lake Monsters at some point. And then I picked up Mercier's Lake Monster Traditions. So I'm like, oh no, it's already been done. Unfortunately, the book is out of print. I was able to snag a copy for relatively cheap, but it's hard to find at a reasonable price nowadays. But in that book, he also talks about the tendency for light anomalies to appear in monster lakes as well, not only in the skies above, that's commonly described Loch Ness as well, but also underwater. You know, people who end up scuba diving in some of these lake monster lakes will see a flash behind them, and then they'll turn around and they won't see anything.
Joshua, at least it's better than being chased by a shark.
Oh, that's true. I mean, actually what terrifies me is I grew up on Lake Norman in North Carolina, and it's a man-made lake, and, you know, there are stories of, like, the Loch Norman monster, they call it, which is probably a fish, but that's neither here nor there. But I do know some friends of my father's who would scuba dive in the lake, which is terrifying on its own because I think visibility on a good day is like 18 inches, right? And they said that they would feel something come up to them and bump their elbow, and they'd turn around and it would be a catfish as big as they were, you know. So that almost scares me more than the shark, you know, something about not being able to see. And yeah. Although I will say, you know, after working on this book, lake monsters terrify me a lot more than I thought they would, given some of the ways that I interpreted the symbolism around them, I guess I should say.
Do you focus much on undersea UFOs? And I was thinking of that because just when I was doing a search for the book from Trevor James Constable, I came up with Invisible Residence from Ivan T. Sanderson back in the 60s, where he talked about underground or underwater UFOs.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, that's a great touchstone work on this topic, and I think it's a vastly underexplored topic. I did talk about undersea UFOs, at least in the sense that, again, we always tend to say that these things come from places that were always either the other world or the dead. And I believe in Thompson's Folklore Index, one of the motifs that are listed is, you know, body of water as the underworld. And sure enough, you know, you'll find a lot of different traditions that talk about the afterlife or the underworld or the other world being under the sea or within a lake. And, you know, to that extent, there are some people who suspect that the word soul is actually derived from, I believe, an Old English or Old German word for sea. And, you know, the sea is this constant metaphor that we use when we talk about the final passage that we make, where, you know, rivers returning to the sea and things like that. And indeed, my own, you know, suspicions about the way that the process of reincarnation works often sort of invoke that idea as well. Like, we all go to that and we come back from that, which, again, speaks to the idea that you mentioned about universal consciousness and monism and everything being one. Like, there's just this reservoir of soul energy at the other side. Sometimes it comes into this world, and when it does, just like, you know, water droplets that you might get from the ocean, those came from everywhere, and they have been around for as long as, you know, anyone knows, those molecules. So, yeah, I think that there's something to it. But as far as, like, dissecting the actual cases of undersea UFOs, not a lot of that. But I don't think you can't not talk about that, you know.
I always appreciate, and I love books that go, you know, really, you know, deep into the research of older mythologies, older, you know, religious texts, and their pertinence to what's going on today. And I'm bringing up the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which you write quite a bit about in your book, and the even though that this was something that was written, you know, God knows how long ago, there is a lot still going on today that if you read the book, you're like, wow, not only with, you know, not only with near-death experiences, but the whole UFO mythology as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I think, you know, whenever you've, it's always interesting to see a near-death researcher's feelings about the Bardo after, or the Bardo Todal or Thodol, pardon my pronunciation, after they've been looking at near-death experiences for a while, because they always come back and they're like, this sounds a lot like what people are experiencing today, you know. And again, I'm going to cite Carl Jung. He said that, you know, it's so uncanny, some of the similarities that you hear, it makes you wonder if there were actually is some validity to it. And this sentiment is paralleled in modern researchers like Gregory Shushan, who is a fantastic researcher in indigenous and ancient civilizations concepts of near-death experiences and comparing them to modern experiences as well. But yeah, I mean, there are so many different things. And one of those things, again, is the idea that you'll meet monsters, but they aren't necessarily monsters. They're aspects of yourself that you haven't dealt with.
So I am a big hairy creature who roams around in the forests.
Possibly. I mean, if you look at things like, see if I'm mixing, yeah, I'm sort of mixing mythologies here, but there are antecedents. You know, the Hindu Rakshasa is a demon that's covered in hair, and you can sort of find analogs to that in a lot of these Buddhist teachings as well. But, you know, and again, you find this, you know, the title of the book, Ecology of Souls, is a Terence McKennaism, where he speculated that the DMT realm might be the ecology of souls. And according to him, now, you know, you got to take everything Terry says with a grain of salt, but he was told by a highly placed Buddhist monk, whom he turned on to DMT, his words, that the DMT experience was the farthest you could get without crossing the point of no return. So Terence started referring to it as the bungee into the Bardo. And I always thought that was a charming turn of phrase.
Let me throw this out here, and I'm going to be vague about it because I don't want to identify the person. Someone I know very well took a dose of a hashish back in the early 70s. It's a woman. And other people who tried that substance had barely any effect. This stuff is no good. Doesn't do anything to anyone, except for her laughing and giggling and reveling in this other incredible universe that she visited. Now, after she came down from it, again, unique amongst those who took the rather mild dose of this hallucinogenic, for months it took her all that time to begin to come down from the experience. It affected her day-to-day life. And you think, did she happen to stumble into a real place? Did she go wacko? I don't think she went wacko. I just think she might have stumbled into a place that we normally do not visit.
I mean, that's a great question. What I find really interesting about that is the fact that nobody else had that same experience, which, again, something else you see in sightings is that 2 out of 5 people will see something strange in the sky and the other 3 won't. But, you know, you've got things like individual biochemistry, set and setting is a huge part of these experiences. You know, there was an anecdote that McKenna used to tell about biochemist Alexander Shulgin, who exposed his classroom to some sort of undefined chemical. And of the 200 students that were in there, all but 2 failed to smell it. And the 2 that did became physically ill. And McKenna thought that Shulgin thought that they were probably more sensitive to that chemical than everybody else in the class. And a lot of these aromatic compounds have a lot of similarities to some of these entheogens and psychedelics and whatnot. So there, a reasonable supposition can be made that there are genetic differences in the way that we relate to some of these substances. You know, that and from what I understand, again, I'm a pretty straight-edge guy, but from what I understand, hashish ain't what it used to be nowadays, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, this is, of course, going back to the early 70s where this encounter occurred. And those of us who were aware of the person who had this experience thought for quite a few years there that she had really gone off the deep end. It did make changes in her life that even after the initial effects kind of sort of expired, it made changes in her life that probably took years to overcome. And I just wonder about that. But then again, I think a lot of this is just triggering something that's already there. And right, how you react to it is up to you and what you expect. And maybe this person expected something to happen, needed something to happen, and that was the answer. I don't know. I don't pretend to know. And that's really the most I'll say publicly about it because, as I said, I just don't know. Tim, Joshua, and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP. As slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.